Tam Keshabandha Vyatishakta Malikam Brihannitam Bastana Krichra Madhyamam Suvasasam Kalpita Karna Bhushana Tvishola Sadkuntala Manditananam Valgusmita Panga Visarga Vikshitar Manoharantim Vanitam Vrajaukasam Amamsatam Bhojakarena Rupinim Gopyashriyam Drashtum Ivagatam Patim. Translation: her hips were full, her breasts were large and firm, seeming to overburden her slim waist, and she was dressed very nicely. Her hair, adorned with a garland of Malika flowers, was scattered about her beautiful face. Her earrings were brilliant, and as she smiled very attractively, glancing upon everyone, her beauty drew the attention of all the inhabitants of Raja, especially the men. When the gopis saw her, they thought that the beautiful goddess of fortune, holding a lotus flower in her hand, had come to see her husband, Krishna. Okay, verse 7. Balagrahastatra vichinvati shishun Yadrichaya ananda grihe sadandakam Baham pratichannani joru tejasam Dadarsha talpegnim ivahitam basi. Balagraha, the witch whose business was to kill small babies. Tatra, standing there. Vichinvati, thinking of, searching for. Shishun, children. Yadrichaya, independently. Nandagrihe, in the house of Nanda Maharaj. Asat Antakam, who could kill all demons. Balam, the child. Pratichanna, covered. Nija Uru Tejasam, whose unlimited power. Dadarsha, she saw. Talpe, lying on the bed. Agnim, fire. Eva, just like. Ahitam, covered. Bhasi, within ashes. Translation: while searching for small children, Putana, whose business was to kill them, entered the house of Nanda Maharaj unobstructed, having been sent by the superior potency of the Lord. Without asking anyone's permission, she entered Nanda Maharaj's room, where she saw the child sleeping in bed, his unlimited power covered like a powerful fire covered by ashes. She could understand that this child was not ordinary, but was meant to kill all demons. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada: demons are always busy creating disturbances and killing. But the child lying on the bed in the house of Nanda Maharaj was meant to kill many demons. Oh, shall I read another verse? It's a short purport. Text 8. Vibhudyatam balakamarika graham chara charatma sa nimili tekshana anantam aropayad ankamantakaham yato ragam suptam abhudirajudhi. Translation: Lord Shri Krishna, the all-pervading supersoul, lying on the bed, understood that Putana, a witch who was expert in killing small children, had come to kill him. Therefore, as if afraid of her, Krishna closed his eyes. Thus Putana took upon her lap him who was to be her own annihilation, just as an unintelligent person places a sleeping snake on his lap, thinking the snake to be a rope. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. In this verse there are two perplexities. When Krishna saw that Putana had come to kill him, he thought that since this woman was present with motherly affection, although artificial, he had to offer her a benediction. Therefore, he looked at her with a little perplexity and then closed his eyes again. Putana Rakshasi also was perplexed. She was not intelligent enough to understand that she was taking a sleeping snake on her lap. She thought the snake to be an ordinary rope. The two words antakam and anantam are contradictory. Because of not being intelligent, Putana thought that she could kill her antakam, the source of her annihilation. But because he is ananta, unlimited, no one can kill him. Blagrahastatra vichinvati shishun yadrichayananda grihe sadantakam. Balam pratichannani joru tejasam nadashratalpegnim ivahitam basi. While searching for small children, Putana, whose business was to kill them, entered the house of Nanda Maharaj unobstructed, having been sent by the superior potency of the Lord. Without asking anyone's permission, she entered Nanda Maharaj's room, where she saw the child sleeping in bed, his unlimited power covered like a powerful fire covered by ashes. She could understand that this child was not ordinary, but was meant to kill all demons. Vibhudyatam balakamarika graham characharatma sannimili tekshana anantam aropa yad ankam antakam yathoragam suptam abuddhirajudhi. Lord Sri Krishna, the all-pervading supersoul lying on the bed, understood that Putana, a witch who was expert in killing small children, had come to kill him. Therefore, as if afraid of her, Krishna closed his eyes. Thus Putana took upon her lap him whom was to be her own annihilation, just as an unintelligent person places a sleeping snake on his lap, thinking the snake to be a rope. So the first two verses we read have no commentary, because the verse basically describes the bodily features of Putana. Srimad Bhagavatam describes full hips, large and firm breasts. So Srila Prabhupada didn't comment upon that. We heard in the lecture the other day by Mataji Prema Manjari, in the commentaries of the Acharyas and other Shastras, how she was appearing to be 16 years old. So young, attractive, and, you know, smiling, flirting, and she could get away with anything pretty much. So she entered Nanda Maharaja's room where Krishna was sleeping, and it is described here that her business was killing small children. So one of the principal tenets of the Vedic society is that some groups are protected: children, women, brahmanas, elderly people, and cows. Five groups of persons who are protected in Vedic society. And Putana was killing children. You know, in Vedic society, you don't kill children. You don't kill women. Even if woman committed a homicide, a murder, you cannot put a woman in prison, neither can you execute her. Elderly people, they have to be protected. Brahmanas and cows. So if a woman is elderly and a brahmani, she's protected multiple times, you know. She can get away also by, you know, producing some cow sound. But you cannot punish a woman in the Vedic society. Also, you cannot kill children. Unfortunately, none of these groups of people are protected in the present society, in the Kali Yuga. Women are exploited, children are aborted, which is the murder of children. Cows are murdered, elderly people are just, you know, tossed aside. Let us put them away in the hospice so we don't have to bother with them. Like that. The women, children. Brahmanas, and who cares about the Brahmanas? So, Putana saw Krishna, and Krishna closed his eyes, looked at her, and she was like, oh. She felt something, then Krishna closed his eyes. And acharyas described several different reasons why Krishna closed his eyes. One was to assure her, one was not to get her afraid, another one was that he was about to kill a woman, although she was a demoness, and it was the first demon Krishna killed, and you know, this first demon was a woman. So later on we see how Krishna killed Arishtasura, who took the form of a bull, and then Gopis said, no, you don't approach us, you killed the cow, you're sinful. Therefore you have to bathe in all the holy waters of the universe to purify yourself. And then Krishna created Shyamakund, and then Radharani created Radhakund from this pastime. But these were demons. So Putana was, okay, we can say in the language of the modern West that Krishna did not discriminate on the basis of gender. Because the first demon who came was a woman, so no problem. I'm not just kill male demons, I'm going to kill female demons as well. You know, more than 20 years ago, 25, 30 years ago, there was a controversy in America when the storms were coming, the tropical storms. Every storm was given a name. But meteorologists gave all the storms male names, and then women started complaining, why don't you give storms female names? You know, okay, this storm is coming to destroy, but you want to give it a particular name because I don't know why, you know. You know, it has to have female name. Why? You know, it's destroying everything. So here we have a comparison in the word, in the verse, and in the commentary that unintelligent person picks up a snake, thinking it to be a rope, and places it on its lap. Now, there's another example in the Shastras when a person is walking down the road. And there's a rope lying on the road, and person thinks it's a snake. But here, we have another comparison. A person sees a snake, thinks it's a rope, and lifts it up and puts it on one's lap. Now, you know, you can, you know, if it's dark, you can mistaken a snake on the road for a rope. But if you touch it, you know it's not a rope. Because snakes are smooth and cold and slimy. It's like, bleh. Has anyone ever touched a snake? Yes. Like, bleh. Gross.
They are good persons.
Well, depending on the snake. But how can you mistake a snake for a rope, even if you take it into your hand? You have to be really stupid, especially a dangerous, poisonous snake. You know, a cobra. Oh, look at this. It's a rope. It's a rope that hisses. So Putana was not intelligent. Her desire to kill Krishna, as she was killing children before, covered her intelligence, so she couldn't understand. And you could feel Krishna's power, Krishna's tejas there. Krishna was lying there, described here as a powerful fire covered by ashes. And the only thing you have to do is blow away the ashes a little bit and fire comes back again. So there were examples in the modern times when there's a fire in the forest and they extinguish the fire, but there's still embers under the ashes. And then they think, okay, we extinguish the fire, and then fire starts burning again. So you could feel, you know, you come to the ashes and you can feel the heat. So Putana, when she approached Krishna, she could feel his power.
But still, her intelligence was covered. Therefore, whenever we have some material motive when approaching Krishna, it covers our intelligence. Dantavakra? Was it Dantavakra? Yeah, Dantavakra attacked Krishna on some battlefield. And he was so covered. There are six demons, and each one of them represents one of the main six categories of the anarthas in the heart. Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya. So let's see. Hiranyakashipu represents pride. Hiranyaksha represents greed. Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha. Ravana represents lust. Kumbhakarna represents illusion. Shishupala represents envy, and Dantavakra represents anger. So anytime one of these anarthas or group of anarthas hits us in the head, we lose our intelligence. Lust hits us, intelligence goes out the window. Greed, intelligence goes out the window. And what Dantavakra, who was really angry at Krishna, attacked Krishna on the battlefield. But he was so angry that he jumped off the chariot and he forgot to take his weapons. And he was running towards Krishna, screaming. It's like, how stupid do you have to be? You know, his name was Dantavakra, which means he had bent teeth. His teeth looked really ugly. But, you know, here you are on the battlefield. You have a chariot pulled by the horses. You have a charioteer. You have your weapons on the chariot. And you just jump down and start running at Krishna, who is on the chariot, has all of his weapons with him and everything. But Krishna was like, okay, the rules of warfare oblige me not to fight with any weapon against him. So Krishna got off the chariot and killed him with his bare hands. Ravana, covered by lust, he stole Sita. You know, first of all, he couldn't see that he stole fake Sita, Maya Sita, and then he rejected all of the good advice. His brother Vibhishan, his advisor Maricha, advised him nothing. You know, no, and you know, his generals were killed. His sons were killed. His brother was killed. And then he himself just wouldn't let go. You know, his city was burned by Hanuman before the battle began. Nothing. He wouldn't accept anything. This Ramachandra, he's just a human. And I am a big demon. And then he was killed. So when intelligence covers us, you know, that's it. Up until some point, we are okay. But after that, no. In the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a pastime of Daksha, the great materialist, conducting a big yagya. So he invited all the demigods. Everyone was there. Demigods, 330 million demigods. They were all there in this arena. It had to be a really huge arena. And Shiva was there. Shiva, who married Sati, Daksha's daughter. And then Daksha enters the arena and he was glowing. He was such a successful materialist. And everyone automatically got up. And Shiva was in meditation on Lord Ramachandra. He was in Samadhi. He didn't even notice. And he didn't get up. And then Daksha got really disturbed because of this. Because 929,999,999 demigods got up, but one didn't. And he got really disturbed. So this is the first step, the insignificant reason. Oh, you know, all the other devotees got 25 gulab jamuns and I got 24. Aha. Uh-huh. It is because this devotee who serves prasadam doesn't like me. And then Daksha got really offended. You know, first the insignificant reason. Oh, he didn't get up to pay obeisances. My God, what a horrible thing. You know, everyone should respect me. Why? Because I think so. Because I say so. And then he started justifying what is the offense he's about to do. He says, listen, everybody. I'm not saying this because of me, of course. I'm saying this because for the benefit of everyone. So, you know, it's not my personal selfish reason. And then he says, you know, all of you got up, but he didn't. And therefore, he thinks he's better than all of you. I'm not speaking this because of me, I'm speaking this because of you. Because I care about you. It's not my ego tripping. I'm speaking this because of you, for your benefit. And, you know, it's the culture. He should have gotten up. It's the culture. So I'm speaking this to protect Vaishnava culture, not because I'm ego tripping. And then he says, you know, but I gave him my daughter as wife. Therefore, it makes me superior to him. I'm his father-in-law. So he should have been respectful. And I gave him my daughter, who is beautiful, and he's covered in ashes. He lives in crematorium. He's followed by all of these ghosts. Then, you know, we go into history of shortcomings of Shiva, why he's not qualified to receive his daughter. Then he says, my daughter has the eyes like a doe, but he has the eyes like a donkey. Hee-haw. Then he started insulting Shiva. And then on the end he curses Shiva. I think there are seven steps. Then he gets angry. Then he curses Shiva. Up until the anger comes, no, he still could have pulled back. But now, completely covered. And the result was that Daksha lost his head, literally. He got the head of a goat, and finally he apologized. I don't know if he learned permanent lesson, but, you know, at least some lesson was learned. You lose your head, literally. So, Putana approached Krishna with the ulterior motive, oh, I'm going to kill him. No, not only kill, she was killing babies and she was eating babies. She was a cannibal witch. A cannibal demoness. Can you imagine killing babies and then eating little babies? Ooh, horrible. You know, you meet someone, you know, every day we see a little baby in the temple. We see little Arunaksha, the son of Indian devotees from Govindas. And he's such a cute baby. His big brown eyes, and he's like, And you know, his parents were peeling carrots, and he grabbed one carrot and stuck it in his mouth, and he was trying to eat it, although he has only two teeth upstairs. And still he was trying to eat the carrot. You know, such a cute baby. And imagine someone trying to kill that baby. Horrible. You cannot imagine. But she was killing babies, you know, for many years, and eating babies. Just a side story. That's how Srimati Radharani came to Vrindavan. Srimati Radharani was actually when her mother got pregnant, Mother Kirtida, Radharani was conceived like that in Varshana. But then Yoga Maya transferred her to the womb of the wife of the king of the Vindhya mountains in South India. That's why one of Radharani's name is Vindhyavali. And Chandravali, okay, Maharaj Vrishabhanu, Radharani's father, his brother Chandrabhanu, and his wife got pregnant. And that daughter was Chandravali, but Yogamaya transferred her to the womb of Maharaj Vindhya's wife. So they were born like twins, Chandravali and Radharani. And it appeared that as if Kirtida Mataji lost her pregnancy, just like with Krishna and Balaram when they were conceived in the prison of Kamsa. And then Radharani and Chandravali were born as twin sisters, as the daughters of the king of Vindhya mountains. And then when Kamsa sent Putana to kill Krishna, Putana didn't go directly to Vrindavan. she did a tour of South India, and she stole a group of newborn princesses, two of them being Radharani and Chandravali. And she was carrying them in her arms, you know, as some snack, you know, fast food on the road. And she came, and she was flying above Vraja. You know, Vrindavan is a town, and Vraja is a big, broad region. So she was flying above Vraja. Now, as she stole these babies, these kings in South India got really disturbed. You know, this witch is stealing children all over India. So they quickly gathered brahmanas, and brahmanas did a fire sacrifice for the destruction of the witch. You know, and they were, you know, reciting all of these mantras. I don't know what are the mantras for killing the witches. Pishachi marana svaha, svaha, svaha. And as they were doing yagya and reciting mantras, Putana, who was now flying over Braja, started to experience problems in her flight. And then one baby would fall down. And baby would fall so messed up. These are all girls. There were 9 girls. And this one would fall, and this one. And every girl who would fall down, some cowherd woman or cowherd man would find her and adopt her as their own. And finally, there was only Radharani left there. And then final last, and at the end of the yagya, she had a twitch. She had a twitch, and Radharani fell from her arms too, and she fell into Yamuna. And Lord Brahma personally appeared there to catch her and put her on the golden lotus flower in the middle of Yamuna. And then when Vrishabhanu Maharaj came in the morning, that was night, so when Vrishabhanu Maharaj came in the morning to take his bath in Yamuna, he saw this beautiful baby girl in the middle of Yamuna on the golden lotus flower. Yamuna was full with water. So it was what? It was September. It's the rainy season, so all the rivers are full of water. So he couldn't reach her, so Lord Brahma personally brought her to him. So Putana was instrumental in bringing Radharani back to Vrindavan. You know, a pastime. This is described by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Vidagdha Madhava. He took it from different scriptures. So Putana just brought Radharani to Vrindavan, and these other 8, there were the 8 principal gopis, Ashtasakis. And then she came to kill Krishna. So we've heard from Mataji Prema Manjari the other day the story of Putana's past life. She was, some say, the sister, others say, the daughter of Bali Maharaj. And then when Lord Vamanadev, who was a dwarf and a boy, so double sweet, when he came to the court of Bali Maharaj to take everything from him, she felt motherly affection for this child. She said, "Oh, I want to have this child as my own. I want to breastfeed him. I want to be his mother." These maternal feelings are awoken in her. And you know, if you are in the group of people, men and women, and someone brings the baby in, all the women want to take the baby, and men are like, "Yeah, cool, sweet, yeah." You know, and if you bring a baby in the room full of men, it's like no one would take the baby unless you put the baby into men's, you know, "How do I hold the baby?" Women, natural, even little, you know, girls, you know, you bring a baby, they know how to take him, how to hold the head, naturally. Men, you have to teach them. You know. It's not that they don't have it, but you have to show them. They have this fatherly affection. You know. So she wanted to be the mother of Vamanadev, but then after that, when Vamanadev stole everything, literally, from Bali Maharaj, she wanted to kill him. So now in this life, she was born as Putana, so she got an opportunity to breastfeed him as a mother, and to try to kill him. She couldn't kill him, of course. But, you know, Krishna cannot be killed. Krishna can die if he wants to die. It's like sometimes atheists give an argument, can God commit suicide? And if the answer is no, then God is not omnipotent, he's not all-powerful, therefore he's not God. And if he can commit suicide, then he can die, therefore he's not God. You know, God can commit a suicide, but he's not going to commit a suicide because he's not psychologically unstable like people who ask these questions. So Putana came and she wanted to kill Krishna. She thought she would kill Krishna. So how did he kill? You know, she had her breasts full of milk. I don't know if she had this motherly affection still, so milk formed in her breasts, or she used her mystic powers to create milk, and then she smeared her breasts with a strong poison, and then when baby Krishna would start drinking it, he would drink milk, and he would also get poison and die. So as we will see later, Krishna, of course, sucked the milk, sucked the life out of Putana, and she died. But he accepted her as a mother. Although she tried to kill him, he still accepted her as his mother because she breastfed him. So Krishna is called as Gunagrahi, the one who accepts only good qualities, or Saragrahi, the one who accepts the essence. And because she breastfed him, he accepted her as his mother. And Putana, when she died, she got liberated and she went to Goloka Vrindavan when she's a personal young assistant of Mother Yashoda. You know, one of Krishna's nurses, one of Krishna's nannies. And there's a verse in the previous chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam describing Krishna's mercy upon Putana. And the interesting thing about this verse is that when Shukadev Goswami was born, he was blessed. Before he stayed for 16 years in his mother's womb. Who was Shukadeva's father? Vyasadev. And his mother's name was Vatika Devi. So he stayed in his mother Vatika's womb for 16 years. He didn't want to come out until he's freed from illusion. So Krishna personally came and blessed him in the womb. You will always be free from illusion. Then Krishna left, then Shukadeva was born. And immediately he left. He left the home and entered the forest. And his parents were brokenhearted. And Vyasadev went searching for him in the forest. He called his name, Shukadev, Shukadev, but only echo replied. So Shukadev came back to his ashram, which is called Shamyaprasa. And this was up there in the celestial Himalayas. So he already composed Srimad Bhagavatam, but he still didn't write it down. He composed entire Srimad Bhagavatam in his head. So he invited a few of his disciples and gave them few sweet verses from Srimad Bhagavatam and sent them to the forest to chant them loudly. And one of the verses was how merciful Krishna was to Goddess Putana and how much more merciful he has to be to his devotees. So when Shukadev heard this verse, although he was an impersonalist, he turned around and came back to this disciple of his father and said, "Where is this from?" He said, come back, your father is going to explain everything to you." So Shukadev came back and then learned the entire Bhagavatam from Vyasadev. And then he was self-realized devotee, not an impersonalist anymore. So the story of Putana and Krishna's mercy upon her was the verse that attracted Shukadev back. And because of this particular verse, Shukadev heard Bhagavatam, became an expert in Bhagavatam, and then later on, decades later, delivered it to Parikshit Maharaj. So the story of Putana goes in many directions on many different levels. And in other places, it is described all the reasons why Krishna closed his eyes after looking at Putana and after she looked at him, but I could remember only these two or three. There are more reasons. So we'll stop here. Any questions, comments, corrections, or critiques? No. Oh, Ivan.
Yes, I have one question. We hear about Putana, I think, 2 days or so.
Ah, nisam te čuo.
Um, is this story important? Because we know today it's not a critic. I'm thinking about what's the point of Putana. Is it the point of the demonic mother, or what's the point of this?
Oh, yeah. Every demon that Krishna killed, he didn't kill demons, he also overpowered some demoniac mentalities. Some demons he didn't kill Kalia, he didn't kill Vidyadhara, and then also Indra and Varuna were not demons, they were devotees, but some demoniac mentality overpowered them, so Krishna overpowered that mentality, so he didn't always kill, but mostly he did kill devotees. So this principle, he didn't kill demons. So, in principle, he did kill them. But every single one of these demons represents an anartha, an undesirable thing in the heart. And Putana being the first one, we also heard this the other day from Mataji Prema Manjari, represents the pseudo-guru, the false guru. Because guru gives spiritual knowledge. And here Putana gives milk, like mother, but her breasts are smeared with poison, so she kills a child. So the pseudo-guru does give some spiritual knowledge, but he mixes in some pseudo-knowledge which takes people away from Krishna, gives you spiritual knowledge and gives something fake, and that takes you away or keeps you away from Krishna. So that's the, you know, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we get to love Krishna, and then we love everything Indian. And then we get some books or some bhajans coming from some crazy people from India. You know, not everyone in India is in love with Krishna. You know, once you go to India, you see some really strange or weird people. So then we have to differentiate between this and that. And I know devotees who became devotees, were devotees for a few years or so, and then got some other Indian books by some other Indian so-called gurus, and then they left Krishna consciousness because whatever these guys wrote in their books, you know, sounded to them more spiritual, mostly because they didn't demand for regulative principles. So Putana was feeding Krishna with milk, but there was also some poison. And it doesn't have to be a lot of poison. There was much more milk. You know, you can have a jug of milk and, you know, half a drop of poison that can kill you. So with this pseudo-spiritual knowledge coming from false gurus in India, not just in India, that can kill us. So this first demon is really important. We have to overcome this anartha, that we go for something that's Indian and spiritual, or even non-Indian and spiritual. There's a popular guy going around the world having bhajans. He recorded albums. He has sold out concerts, and he sings different bhajans. He sings Maha Mantra and some different bhajans, some for Ganesh, some for Durga. And he's an impersonalist. His guru was an impersonalist, although he lived in Vrindavan and spoke about Krishna, and he's an impersonalist. And he said, all of these names, you know, Krishna, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, it's all the same. He didn't say it's all the same. He said it's the same stool, but he said the bad word for stool. Poop. And then he said, these are all our names. It's like, it's all the same, and we're also the same, we're God. And he's going around chanting bhajans, and he's famous, and, you know, even devotees were chanting with him. You know, and some guys who are some kind of devotees who travel with him don't even follow the four regulative principles. When he came to my hometown more than 10 years ago, devotees were looking around who can accommodate his musicians. And then, you know, this senior lady, she had a place, she could accommodate two of his musicians. And they told him, yeah, but you know, one of them is a smoker. What? No. Find him some other accommodation. She was harsh. But, you know, this guy preaches this impersonal philosophy. It's like horrible. No, okay, here's a quick short story. At the very end of the First World War, there was a young man, 19 years old, from Scotland, Mr. Nixon. He was a military pilot, and he was shot while in the plane, and as his plane was crashing down, he prayed to God, "Please save me, save my life, save my health. If you save me, I will dedicate the rest of my life in search of you, in pursuit of you." So he survived. He had only minor injuries, and war was just about to finish. So when the war finished, he enrolled in the university to study philosophy as a part of his promise to search for God. So he wanted to study philosophy. He finished his 4 years of philosophy in England, in Scotland, and then immediately, because Britain was then an empire which spread all over the world, and its part was India, he was invited to come to northern India to the city called Lucknow to study philosophy in the university there. And when he came to Lucknow, he befriended one aristocratic man. He invited him home. He met his wife, and he told to his wife, "You're my guru, you're my guru." And then they started practicing some Krishna consciousness. She took on the name Yashoda. She gave him the name Krishna Prem, or Sri Krishna Prem. And then her husband initiated her. What's that? And then her husband died, and two of them, you know, she and her disciple continued practicing Krishna consciousness. She had some problems with her lungs, so they opened an ashram up there in the Himalaya where she could breathe better. And they practiced some form of Krishna consciousness, and they read books about Krishna. And then they visited Vrindavan, and there they took initiation in one deviant guru parampara that exists in Vrindavan, and returned to the Himalaya. And she died, and he continued being guru. He had a group of followers, Indians and one Western. And then, you know, they followed some philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and then they had two visits. They were visited by Ramana Maharshi, a famous modern-day impersonalist, and they adopted some of his philosophy, and then they were visited by Mr. Gurdjieff, who was Russian and one of the founders of the theosophy, philosophical speculators, and they adopted some of his philosophy as well. And now their ashram is still up there in the Himalaya, in the place called Mirtola, close to Almora, in the state of Uttarakhand. And they worship the deities like devotees, but their philosophy has changed from Krishna consciousness to something, and he called it the evolution of philosophy. But they just met fake gurus who influenced them, and that's it. There are some kinds of Vaishnavas, but the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is heavily mixed with these two schools of impersonal. I mean, Ramana Maharshi, you know, my God, you know, he was a holy man in India who wore only kopan, nothing else, and he traveled around like this. But he was an impersonalist, a Mayavadi. He knows nothing about God. And yet his books are sold, you know, horrible. Horrible. There's another Mayavadi popular today. They call him the Sadguru. He called his name, you know, Sadguru Jaggi Vasudev. I call him Sadguru. And he gives some philosophy. You know, he's quite popular in India, an old Indian with the long white beard and the hair and the turban. And, you know, he's quite popular. He's been preaching for decades. But he knows Jack. You know, impersonal. And you see, he doesn't know and he speculates. And I'm like, he says some nice things. And then he says some crazy things. And I'm like, someone asked him, "Can you define God?" And he says, "Oh, God cannot be defined. If God could be defined, you know, he wouldn't be worth pursuing. God cannot be defined. God is formless. God." It was like, you know, why don't you read Brahma Samhita? We chant it every day. Venum kvananta maravinda dalayata akshad. You know, he plays on his flute. he has a, wears a peacock feather, you know, his complexion is the color of the dark rain clouds, and Venu Kvanantam Aravinda, his eyes are like the petals of a lotus. Dalayatakshat Barhavatam Samasitam Buddhasundarangam Kandarpa Koti Kamaniya Vishesha Shobha, and his beauty eclipses the beauty of millions of cupids. I worship that Govinda, the primeval Lord. And that's the definition of God. And this guy has no idea. And every single devotee who comes to the temple for the first time hears it and knows it. Oh yeah, really? Okay, nice. There are more verses in the song, in the book, one chapter of the book, defining God clearly. And it's true, you cannot define God, but God can define himself. And then when you use his words where he defined himself, there's the definition of God. 9 o'clock passed, time for prasadam. Grantarad Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.